welcome to episode one of No Time to Play Today, a podcast where we discuss board games, card games, video games that we don't seem to have time to play, but are what we're willing to talk about. I am, I guess, the co-host, Scott, and I am joined by Matt.
Oh, me. Hello. Hello. How's it going?
Good. Tony.
Hello there.
Shane.
Howdy.
And Lenny.
Hello, hello.
All right. So, now, did you have anything you wanted to do off the top, Matt, or should I start?
No, I do have certain things I want to talk about, but I don't know if we have, like, a... Like, do we do, like, video games first, board games, and card games, or, like, how does...
Yeah, I think we'll switch it up each time. So, last episode...
We did video games first, so...
We did video games first, so I would like to talk about Netrunner. Running Nets.
Excellent.
So the first things first, one, why everyone, including Tony, should be playing Netrunner was the first discussion I wanted to have. Okay, so one, Lenny, do you... Tony, do you like Risk?
Of course I like Risk.
Well, Netrunner is all about Risk.
Is it now?
there are lots of risks you take in Netrunner.
All right, well, to take a step back, Netrunner is a two-player game, a dueling game, where one person plays a evil corporation or a good corporation, depending on how you want to think about it, and the other person plays a evil or good hacker, depending on how you view it. It's turn-based, so a corp has a turn, then a runner has a turn. And you have actions, three for the corp and four for the runner, and you spend them either spending your money to put in programs or assets to either A, score agendas, or if you're the runner, you steal agendas. So when I was alluding to Risk, I joked that sort of Netrunner is a hobby unto itself in the sense that it sort of has everything. It has bluffing, because you don't know what the corporation has, and the corporation doesn't know what the runner has. And as far as the risk element, there's sort of a spatial element where the corporation sets up various locations and it's the runner trying to break into those locations to get what he wants or just to wreck the place. Mm-hmm. It has a chess element where you have to kind of think a couple steps ahead. It has a Scrabble element in the sense that there are lots of words and terminologies that you have to learn to play the game.
Oh, that excites me.
So instead of a discard...
Don't forget the art element, because there's pictures on all of the...
Yeah, if you like Runebound or any role-playing games, there's a lot of thematic stuff in the cards. The cards actually have a mechanic that ties up with its theme. For instance, an example would be Diesel is a card that allows you to draw three cards, and Diesel is the Gatorade Red Bull of the future. So that is, you drink it, and also you have more energy, so you have more cards to do what you want to do. A mining company, you can spend three clicks, which is three actions, to get a whole bunch of money. The idea is that you're digging in the earth to get money, that sort of thing. So it's got a thematic element too as well. The other interesting thing about it is it has a lot of different play styles as well. Like, you can be aggressive, you can be sort of tactical sit back, or you can be rush. You can try to kill the other person, or you can try to just score your agendas, et cetera, et cetera. So it has a bit of everything for everyone. And I've heard a couple of reviews I've heard say, like, it really is a hobby unto itself. Like, it's sort of, you know, when you say I play board games or card games, you sort of say I play Netrunner, because it's all on its own. Kind of like chess to a certain extent. Do you need anything? Shane, would you like to add anything to convince Tony that he should go out and buy it right now?
It'll be hard to go buy it right now.
Well, that's what the internet's for.
I am at the website right now.
I was interrupted for a second by a little boy who wouldn't sleep. Did you mention the fact that it's not a collectible card game, it's a living card game? So, yeah, so when you buy the set, you get all the cards that you need. You don't have to keep buying packs and packs searching for rares.
Yeah.
So that's very nice. And now that all the packs are out, you can look and see if a pack has a card that you want. You don't have to even buy the pack, because you can know what cards are going to be in there. And if there's nothing that you need for your deck, then you don't need to buy that pack.
Yeah, because the only card game experience that I have is Magic, and that was in, like, 1996.
So this game, Netrunner, was designed after Magic by the same guy. The guy who designed Magic designed Netrunner.
Okay.
and it was a response to a lot of the criticisms people had about Magic, is what he built with Netrunner. And so Netrunner wasn't successful the first time around, but then it was bought by Fantasy Flight and reissued, but also tweaked a bit, which I think has greatly improved it, and switched from a collectible card game to a living card game where you get monthly installments of cards that you can buy for under $10, or roughly around $10. And then there's a big box that happens, which just blows everyone's mind because there's a whole bunch of stuff in there that changes the game and allows certain styles to be more successful. And it also has a different, like, if you go online and look at the tournament play, it's kind of a bit, I would argue, there aren't as many diverse styles to play in tournament as there is, like, when you just play with your friends, because you can be a bit more experimental. But it has that, like, you can do something experimental and realize, well, wait, I've got something that might actually work in a competitive environment. And then you go to a competitive environment and you either find out it doesn't work or it does work. Or someone's already thought of it. That's also So, but the reason I brought this up, other than the fact I feel Tony should buy Netrunner, you too, Lenny, is that I have played a lot of Netrunner over the past 2 weeks, which is opposite what Rob's podcast is about. The first was I went to a tournament, which was a very interesting experience. Matt came in and watched for a second until he found out that there wasn't really a place to watch, so he kind of went off and spent a whole bunch of...
I was there in spirit instead after.
Yeah, so he spent a whole bunch of money. I came out of it with no win. So when you play, it's Swiss, so you play once as the corporation and once as the runner. So if you win both your games, that's considered a win for 1 point, or 2 points, sorry. And then a tie is you split. So either you won as a runner or you won as a corp, or you lost as a runner and lost as a corp. Mm-hmm. And then finally there's a loss. So I came out 0-2-2, which was a heck of a lot better than I thought I was going to do. And as I've discussed with Shane, which we could get into the nitty-gritty, I probably should not have lost. I should not have tied one of those. I should have actually had a win, because someone argued with me about how a card was used, and I was not 100% sure how to use it. And when I talked to Shane, I was using it correctly, and the other guy was not. So, yeah.
You should hunt that guy down.
I should.
I'd be like, listen, I beat you.
Well, if I had to describe his playstyle, he was like Shane without any of the skill. He was a very he's a very slow build up kind of guy.
So me?
But no, the way Shane plays, he kind of gets all his pieces into place and then goes, but this guy just put all the pieces in place and then didn't do anything. And so if I'd used the card correctly, he wouldn't have been able to get in and I would have won. Which was what was frustrating afterwards, to realize that his deck was... Because I knew the deck was flawed. Like, that's one thing about this game, it has tempo. You hear that a lot with card games and board games, where you're trying to keep the tempo going in your favor. And so this guy was sort of just sitting there, and I was just scrambling to get my stuff to go, but he wasn't doing anything. So very quickly, it came into my favor. There were two turns if that card had gone in my favor, and there was another turn if I had just had two more credits, he would have lost all his breakers to one of my traps, and then I would have won that one. But because it was evident when he switched to corporation, where he spent a lot of time, you'd appreciate this, Shane, he spent a lot of time building up stuff, but he wasn't stopping me from going in anywhere, and so I just ran all over him and got all the stuff, all the agendas very quickly without much work, so.
Yeah.
Oh, so you're running against them? You weren't the court?
So the first game, when I went, well, I don't know if you remember from episode 0 of our podcast, I discussed that I had built my my Red Queen deck for my runner side, and then I had the Jinteki deck that I was sort of slapping together, which I wasn't sure what to do with. It turned out that Jinteki deck that I threw together at the last minute was probably my stronger deck, ironically. It just played very weird, and I learned pretty much after my first matchup how to play it, and so after my first matchup, which was a loss, I played against a Jinteki and a Shaper player, and he just mopped the floor with me. He didn't mop the floor with me, because I halfway through the game, when I was with my Jinteki 10 and I figured out how to play, And so it came down to the last point. Like, we both had 6 agenda points, and he ran into R&D, and he spent everything he could, and he got through R&D, took a bunch of damage, but he got the agenda that he needed. And he said it was a close game, because there was a couple times. At LAPD Contract Chain, that is the best card.
Yes, I know.
What does that do?
It's an agenda where you have to pay for to take it.
If you're the runner.
Oh, really? How much is it?
It's a 2-point agenda, and it costs
4 advancements.
4 to advance. But the thing is that, like, the runner, just if he's running through everything, like, he's like got all the stuff going, he's breaking into stuff. He kept breaking in, but he had to spend all his money to get in. And he get there, and he look at, and he say, okay, reveal the first card of R&D, and I flip it up, and he'd be like, ugh, put it down. And then I look, and I'd be like, oh, hey, it's LAP contract. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just wondering, like, so it, can you, when you're building a deck, do all your agendas have to be different, or can you just make your agendas all of that one card?
No, you can. There's a limit of 3.
Okay, so you can have a maximum of 3 of the same agenda.
Correct.
And then you can have more than that, obviously.
And Shane's played my deck, though. He knows I also run another one called Future Perfect, which is a side game one. You can only steal it if you complete a side game, which was that crazy thing you saw me do, Shane, or Matt, when I bid 0, 1, or 2, and if it's the same, then he gets through. If it's different, it doesn't work. It's the best.
I just want to tell that story. It's just,
yeah, go ahead.
So we're at the tournament, and we're playing a friendly game with some random guy that just kind of showed up, and you can tell that he's like hardcore, like, science major type guy, and, like, he's really into Netflix more, or not Netflix, oh my god, Netrunner. Everyone's into Netflix, but he's, like, super into Netflix, kind of, I said it again, Netrunner, much more than Scott and I combined, probably, so Scott and him are playing, and I'm, like, following along. Like, I'm obviously not as good. Like, I'm not nowhere near tournament ready, but I know most of the rules and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden he starts playing that card, and then they're just, like, doing this weird, like, thing under, and then they're, like, revealing their hands, and I'm like, what is happening right now? I don't know what's going on.
The card was Caprice, which I slapped onto HQ, which is, I think, where it belongs.
Yes.
And the premise is that if someone has gotten through all the ice and is going to go against you, you have to do a psi game, which is where you hide 0, 1, or 2 credits in your hand and you reveal. And if both players have the same number, then it doesn't work. But if they're different, then she says the run ends. So it's a great card.
Yeah, that's pretty powerful when you think about it.
Well, yeah. As long as you're playing, as long, you know, still has a 1 in 3 chance of being successful. Probably a bit more if someone's cheap and it's like always bet 0, because they're like, well, it runs the corporation's money down. And it's like, well, no, you know what? If you're gonna spend nothing, I'll spend 2 to keep you out. If I've got the money, so. But yeah, no, it was an interesting experience. I recommend it. Everyone was very friendly. After the first one where I got bumped down to the lower half, as I like to call the dads that are taking up the hobby pool, it was a lot more fun. It was a lot more laid back, and things went pretty well. But Shane, to your point, like when we were talking about the decks, it turns out I have to get that Anarch deck running quickly, because the problem is it stalls. And so I think I've fixed it, but we'll see. Which leads me to my question. The other thing was, I had questions for Shane. So, Shane, you know that game we played on Octagon where I was ready to punch my fist through the computer because it was not working?
Yes.
So
we should mention what Octagon is for those who don't know.
So Octagon, one of the developers of the game, he's developed an online way to duel with people. So for free, you can sign into this thing, load the cards into this Octagon, and you can play against people.
Well, actually, Octagon is a generic system that allows you to play any kind of card game as long as you have a rule set for that card game. So you can get rule sets for card games like Solitaire or
Game of Thrones.
So there are basic card games, and then there are people who have wrote plugins for some of the more esoteric CCGs, and actually even some of the standard ones. Like, there's one for Magic. There's one for Pokemon, I'm pretty sure, and there's one for, Game of Thrones, Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, and Netrunner.
That's pretty cool. So it's just like a kind of like almost like a you were showing me that. It was on your iPad, right, Scott?
No, that was the net deck to build the decks.
Oh, okay.
Create the octagon files to put onto your PC. I would like you to get it, Matt, because I think you would learn a lot more if we actually got to play a bit. Although it's frustrating because there's a steep learning curve of figuring out all the timing, because you realize that when you play in person, there's so much that you communicate with your body language and just simple okay, yeah, that the computer makes you do every step to confirm, and it's kind of difficult at times.
Well, and also it's not really intuitive at all times either. So there are a lot of times when you want to do something, but you're not sure exactly how you're supposed to do it in the online version of the game, whereas in real life it's very easy to just say, okay, I'm doing this now.
I am going here. I'm going to access this. So my question to you, Shane, about that game, because I was thinking afterwards, after I calmed down, that I wasn't doing as bad as I thought.
No, you were doing pretty well.
The LAPD contact was in... So I had 3 points on the board. There was 2 points in the LAPD contracting archives. Were there any other agendas in archives?
No.
Was there any in your hand?
Yes.
Okay. That makes me feel better.
You're talking about you playing Chain, right? Not the tournament?
No, I was this was afterwards. I played Chain on online.
On the Octagon. Okay.
Yeah, so we played an Octagon game.
I never beat Chain. So,
yes, you did. You won the first game we played on Octagon.
Yes. Just got you there.
That's true. I love side games. Side games are way better over the internet because he can't even see my face. So, and you lost every single one.
Yep.
Yeah. I like the Tenet Institute. It's the best. So, and the last part I had for Netrunner, because we've kind of dragged this on a bit, is that I did teaching decks with Shane and Lenny.
Matt and Lenny.
No.
Matt and Lenny.
Your own brother and you forget my name.
So I was going to ask you guys how you felt that experience went. And I'll ask Lenny, because Lenny's really quiet.
I love being quiet. it's my favorite thing to do.
That's really useful on a podcast.
I know. Maybe you can hear my thoughts.
Scott with his side games probably could.
I can. So, Lenny, what did you feel about that?
Sorry, go on.
No, go ahead.
I enjoyed it, but I feel like I would have to play a lot more before I really get a handle on it.
Yeah, it takes a couple times.
Yeah, there's a lot of rules that still. That you kind of have to really grasp before you can really start to play, I guess, well. And I kind of had trouble with ice and icebreakers and the icebreakers on the cards, and you have to kind of. I like the more of a simple game, but you really have to take stock of what's laying out on that table, which is what I had a little bit of trouble with.
In defense, Lenny, you like simple rules, complex strategy.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, I'm just saying you liked we played Biblios, and those games are dirt simple, but there's a lot of nuances in complexity of that game. We played Boss Monster, which we'll talk about later, and that was a game where the rules were pretty simple. It was the complexity came of trying to figure out what was happening on the table, which I agree with Netrunner. Netrunner has complex rules and complex strategy.
Well, the problem with Netrunner is that every card is essentially another rule, right? So, like, every card that you're placing down, it's like, okay, well, now I can do, like, X, Y, Z, right? Like, and then you put another card down, and it's like, oh, now I can do, like, A, B, C, right? So eventually it gets to the point where, especially when later on in the game, when everything's all built up, and you're just like, okay, there's a lot to take in right now. So, like, by the end of the game, when everything's happening, it's quite complicated. And it gets more complicated as time goes on. But once you play over and over again, then you just start to know it better, right?
Yeah.
And also, Lenny, I think you would benefit from playing the corp now that you've like did two games as a runner, because I always did runner. I never did corp before. And so when I was learning the corp, I'm like, oh, okay, I know this a little better because I understand it from the other side of the competition, right? So
yeah, that would ultimately make it a whole lot easier to understand as well, just playing as both sides, because from my side of the table, the big thing was, okay, so I have, you know, so many credits, and okay, I can do this. Wait a minute, how many does this take? And okay, wait, this was taking 5, now it's taking 3, this and that, and you know, it's just a lot of work just to try to figure it out for me.
What's happening?
Sorry, well, that would be my clock dinging for 10 o'clock.
Oh, okay. Hey everyone, it's 10 o'clock right now.
Eastern Standard Time. Yeah. One thing, just to tell you, Shane, because you'll find this interesting, and Tony, because he's already bought all the cards, I'm sure.
Online?
Online.
Not made of money.
I don't know, last podcast, episode 0, which everyone should check out, you seem to be buying 3 or 4 Steam games as the discussion occurred.
Well, Steam sales are completely different from real life.
That's the only time of year that I just buy things whenever I feel it, all willy nilly.
The main Netrunner set costs $40. How many Steam games?
I thought it was less than that. I thought it was $30.
Yeah, isn't it $28 at?
It's $28. Now. That's right. It is $28 now. Because they've got tons of them, and then you can buy the boxes, the small boxes as well. Yeah.
That was the same with the Game of Thrones card game too. It was $28.
Yeah.
Which I bought, but I haven't looked at yet.
I was gonna ask if you'd played that yet, Matt.
No, actually, the guy I live with, he's on a vacation to Mexico right now, so he's the only person that would really play with me about that kind of game. So.
Okay.
So
To be honest, that's kind of my problem too. Is that, you know, sure, I could invest, you know, $50, $60, $70 into one of these decks, but who do I have to play with?
Well, Tony.
And when it comes down to, you have to play it over and over. So say I have to commit 60 hours of playing to master this game that I'm only going to play, you know, once every 3-6 months.
Well, that's what Octagon was called. See, that's why you got to download Octagon.
And I wouldn't say it's 60 hours. I would say probably, you know, play 3 or 4 games and you'll probably get the hang of it.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, you're not going to, like, we're not all going to be doing tournaments and stuff like that.
No, and I understand that.
Yeah, no, the bar would, I would say, Tony, would be lower. Because the thing we're not telling, the we haven't discussed, is that it's, you don't have to necessarily master all, like, there's factions. So there's, like, on the runner side, there's Anarch, Shaper, and then Criminal. Criminals are money and sort of attacking HQ, which is the corporation's hand. Anarchs tend to destroy stuff and target the archive, which is your discard pile, and then Shapers build loads of nice stuff and then run into your R&D, which is your deck, where you draw your cards from. And so, like, you kind of pick which ones you like. Shane tends to play Shaper, I tend to play Anarch on the runner side, and then same thing with the corporations. There's 4 corporations. You sort of pick the one that suits your style, and that's what you sort of stick with, and then maybe you branch out later, but to start with, you kind of pick the same ones to go with. Shane plays NBN, which is really the Fox News of the future. Mm-hmm. And I tend to play Jinteki, which is a goodwill Japanese company trying to make the world a better place through cloning and medical breakthroughs. So.
And zapping your brains all over the place.
You said that like you almost believed it.
So, yeah, I don't know if Scott mentioned the one big thing that people like to say about Netrunner is that it's now I'm going to totally forget what the term was. It's asymmetrical in that when you're playing as the corp, it's very different from playing as the runner. So it's a neat experience because you play once as a corp, once as a runner, and it's a totally different way of playing each time. So it's quite fun.
And to your last point was, if you were interested in playing, you can set yourself up on Octagon, which is OCTGN, and just check. I think there's, Shane, you have the website you sent me that tells you how to set up, and we would totally play it with you.
All right, cool.
Yeah, just search for OCTGN Netrunner, and there's a site that has a pretty good sort of tutorial of how to install it and install the decks.
Also, it would be good, because I own it as well, Tony, so next time I go up there, I can, we can do a little tutorial game.
Hook me up.
And we can use my deck as, like, you know, you can, since it's, like, a basic set, you can, you don't have to, like, it's not like, you, with one pack, you can have multiple decks from that pack. It's not like, you know, each person has to bring their own stuff.
Noise is the best.
Cool.
Shane loves noise. Shane loves when I play noise.
Isn't that, or not.
Isn't that the one where it's like your stuff becomes useless or something like that for the court?
No, every time you play a virus, every time you play a program that has the trait virus, he has to discard the top card off his deck. And Shane hates it because he always looks at the card and makes a face because I've gotten rid of something useful. So
it's because all my cards are useful.
Yeah, that's the other thing too. Every card is useful. So you're sad every time a card goes. Oh,
exactly.
That scorched earth that I could use to destroy you is not available anymore. Very sad. Also, if you get that octagon, we can play Game of Thrones as well, Matt, whenever you crack that open.
Yeah, I gotta crack that thing open.
Yeah, because we're gonna segue to, while I was having a mixed experience at the tournament, Matt was buying stuff. What were you buying, Matt?
Well, I bought Game of Thrones, the card game, which I have not opened up yet. Which is, like, I'm told it's similar to Netrunner, only it's more complicated. Which is
that excites me.
Well, the other
might be too intimidating for other people.
Yeah, the other good thing about Game of Thrones though is it can be four player.
Yeah, which makes it kind of crazy when you think about it too. And it's like, I guess what it really like adds to the whole like Game of Thrones style, like of everyone betraying everyone, right?
That's my understanding.
Yeah,
and everyone dies.
As long as
everyone dies at the end, I'm in.
Everyone that you like that dies, anyways. That's usually how that goes.
I feel there's going to be a moment where Jon Snow, at the end of the book, Jon Snow and Tyrion will be sitting down, having a drink. They'll have both be missing a limb. Same. You know.
Jon Snow and who?
Tyrion.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they'll be just like, damn.
That was crazy.
What a crazy Game of Thrones!
Yeah.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead.
It was the other game that I got, which we actually had a chance to play a few times. Actually, was a game called Boss Monster, which is you are the like the end boss to a 8-bit dungeon style game, and you create you create your own dungeon, and then you have to the key is that you have to entice heroes to come to your dungeon by having cool treasure in it, and then you have to hopefully have enough damage in the dungeon to kill the heroes and take their souls, and the first person that gets a certain amount of souls wins the game. Very simple, and it's like hilarious, especially all the flavor text for all the heroes. What was the guy, the pantsless or something like
Aaron
that?
Aaron the pantless. He wears no pants. I like the guy with the bubble was my favorite. The little boy with the bubble that is looking for lost musical instruments and who I killed in my dungeon.
Or the guy that's like, he's a painter and he just wants to paint everything blue. He's like, he's not depressed. He just really likes the color blue.
Yeah. But, we got in a lot of games of that. Well, we played here, Matt. We played one game here, three-player. Mm-hmm. And we played once Lenny, three-player. And then we played...
You mean the game where you totally screwed me over in one turn, that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of in the same boat.
God, it was so brutal.
Yeah, the one thing about Boss Monster, which I like, is that it has sort of three games playing. So you have your dungeon you're building, which has to make sure it does enough damage. So you have to figure out, have all the rooms interact with each other to make sure you're doing like 10 to 13 points of damage, because that's how the epic heroes, that's how many hit points they have. But then there's a treasure game too. You have to make sure that you have the right amount of treasure, because each card you put in your dungeon has like either two books, which attracts mages, or a gold, which attracts thieves, or swords, which attract warriors. So you have to kind of keep track of what everyone else is doing on the on the board, because we played a game, a four-player game, with Mike, Lenny, Matt, and myself, and Matt and Mike were in this duel for one of the types of treasure for attracting clerics.
Mm-hmm.
And so as that was going on, sort of Lenny focused on treasure and I focused on mage, like books for mages, and so that kind of allowed us to squeak through. Like, I won one game, and then Lenny won a game, and I think Mike won a game. Unfortunately, Matt did not.
No, I haven't won a game yet.
But the final thing I was going to part about the game, which is kind of neat, is hand management. Like, you're trying to build rooms to allow you to get more spells, which are aggressive ways to make everyone's life difficult for the other players, but also to get more rooms so that you can build over your rooms to make your rooms better. So there's it's got three little neat sort of cogs to its machine that you're trying to keep track of. And I really was impressed with how important you actually had to watch other people's dungeons, not necessarily for the specific rooms, but just to keep track of the icons, like how many books they had, how many gold they had, how many swords. Yeah, I was just really impressed. It was a good game. I liked it.
Yeah, that's one of those games that was definitely the simple rules but complex strategy. That's like the definition of that game, which is great, right? Because you're focused more on your own strategy as opposed to trying to learn the game itself.
Now, did you buy the expansion as well, or just the base set?
No, just the base set. I don't think the expansion was there, so I didn't get it.
I think when you talked to me about it, I said, "Well, buy the base set first before you buy the expansion, because
you never know. Like, it could be the worst game of all time." But luckily, it wasn't. So,
yeah. What did you think, Lenny?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I saw the watch it played, and it looked like a lot of fun.
Now, did you like the spells, Lenny, that we used to make Matt's life difficult? Or did you like the construction?
I think in that game, even though Matt was having a hard time, I was kind of in the same boat. No one was doing anything to me, but no one was coming to my really sweet dungeon. And I thought, like, look at all this stuff, but I didn't have enough of any one icon to really have anyone show at the foot of my dungeon. So
I was gonna say, that's what I really liked about it, is that you couldn't just build a, like, it wasn't solitaire. Like, you had to pay attention to what other people were doing. Like, you're like, do I build over this room? If I build over this room with this more powerful card, no one's gonna come to my dungeon, because everyone's gonna go to Mike's dungeon because Mike has three books.
Because you could go, like, you know, I'm gonna, if I build over this room, I'm gonna gain an extra, say, you know, four damage, but I'm going to lose one or two swords, you know, that kind of thing. So you kind of have to balance the two.
Yeah, and that's what I was having trouble with too. And it seemed like Mike was always trying to entice the same people that I was trying to entice.
That's because he was.
Oh, well, yeah.
Was that clerics?
Yeah, it was clerics and fighters. I think fighters was the second game I was trying to entice, and then
the first game he was trying, you guys were in this arms race for cleric symbols, and then the second game it was you were in arms race for swords. And meanwhile, Lenny and I kind of went back and forth for the thieves and the mages, so
the second game, though, I wasn't even remotely close. I couldn't get anything going at all. But it's still good. You know what? A test to a good game is a game that I lose and I still like the game.
Yeah,
I agree.
Because games that I win, naturally I'm gonna like those games. It's like, oh, I won. I love this game.
I won. Where can I buy this?
So, just to wrap up board games, because we've been talking for about 43 minutes about it, just a quick tour around for each person about a board game or card game that they really want to play, either they own or want to buy, and they haven't had a chance to play, just to go with the theme of the podcast. Matt, do you want to start?
Yeah, I'll start. Well, like, for me, it's the Game of Thrones card game, which I have, but I have no one to play it with, so I will play it probably at some point in time. Probably Mike, when he comes back, will probably crack it open and take a look at it. But
you should watch that Fantasy Flight tutorial.
Didn't we watch it already? Or was that a different one?
No, you watched the boss monster tutorial.
No, I'm pretty sure I watched the other one, too.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah, it was like a quick one, though, right? Like a... was showing the different, the three types of, like, attributes that all the characters have and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Plus, I'm really excited about it because Game of Thrones Season 4 is done for, like, a year. So it'll be, like, my Game of Thrones fix.
I really want to try the game as well because apparently it's supposed to be different than Netrunner, which is what I'm interested in. And a four-player game intrigues me as well. Lenny, card game, board game?
Well, up until recently, I've been really wanting to buy Zombicide.
The new one or the old one?
Either or. Probably the new one's the easier of the two, the newer ones. What is it, Prison Break? There's one that's labeled Prison Break,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's season two. They call it season two, but it's like the second.
Yeah, for Shane, I don't know if you know what Zombicide is, right?
Yeah, my coworker plays it. Thomas, he plays it a fair bit, so...
For the listeners at home, Zombicide is a board game where every turn zombies figurines, awesome-looking zombie figurines, spawn on the board. It's urban, so you have to try to move your characters around, but you have to concern yourself with noise. And so, for instance, you can use a gun to try to kill zombies, but then you create noise, which attracts the zombies. And I've never played a game where...
It's so goddamn hard.
A decision in turn two was the decision that decided you were going to win the game.
Yeah.
You don't realize that you made that decision wrong until turn 20, and you're like, oh, what has happened? So
that's awesome.
Sorry, continue, Lenny.
But after playing Boss Monster, I've been kind of checking certain websites here and there just to see, you know, check the prices on it and stuff, because I really want to buy that and the expansion just to try it out.
Yeah, this expansion looks like it's going to have some really cool stuff, because it has items, too, which I kind of really... Because that's the, like... It's with the simplification of Boss Monster is like there is interactivity between, like, you can use spells to kind of mess other people up, but it looks like with the expansion, with the items that the heroes get, it can really mess things up. So it'll be a lot more, like, I think a lot more betrayal will happen.
Is it betrayal when we don't trust each other at all? Isn't it just inevitable?
I guess so.
So Boss Monster's your pick, eh, Lenny?
I think so, and I should just an honorable mention to, I don't want to necessarily buy this, but I'd still like to try it at some point, Flashpoint.
Yes. Flashpoint is a cooperative game where you play firefighters, and so each turn you move and try to put the fires out. What's cool is that at the end of the turn, end of a player's turn, there's a dice roll that randomly determines how the fire spreads, and... You have to save people before the fire destroys everything.
Is that the one that Mike was playing? Mike Rogers?
Yeah, Mike plays it with a bunch of people. I played it three times now, and I think I like it more than Pandemic, actually.
Well, that's another game I haven't played.
Yeah, Pandemic just, I don't know. I feel that it's a puzzle, and once you sit down and figure it out, then you just boss everybody else around the table and say, we're going to do this. Whereas I feel with Flashpoint Rescue, very quickly when you look at it, you're like, I'm putting the fire out to get these people. Then you don't have someone to say, you should do this. You'd be like, no, I'm going to do this instead. Like cooperative games have a problem where you get one guy telling everyone else what to do. And I feel with Flashpoint, you can avoid that. So
yeah, that's good. Because that's like that other game, the one where you're protecting that Citadel and all those monsters.
Oh, Castle Panic.
Yeah, Castle Panic. That's like very, like... As soon as one person figures it out, it's like, you got to do it that way or else you're done.
Mm-hmm.
So, who hasn't?
Shane's next.
So today at lunch, I was supposed to play a game of X-Wing with some of the new ships that they brought out, but unfortunately due to work, I wasn't able to, so I'm looking forward to possibly doing that tomorrow.
And X-Wing is it's a miniatures game with the Star Wars ships that you play on a table and you have a ruler to decide how far they move. Shane, you can expand on it. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the new ships that we're going to try out are the The TIE Defender and the TIE Phantom, those are the ones that I was going to play with. And then my coworker is going to play with the E-Wing for the Rebels and a Y-Wing, which is already out. And
the Trapezoid.
No, the Z-95, which is like a prequel to the X-Wing. So
in the Imperial world, in the Imperial world, the ships go backwards in the alphabet. So you start off with Z and you work your way up to A. So A's are better than B's. Z's are the prototypes, and then Y, and then X. Is that how it works?
No. In the Rebels, most of the ships are sort of called based on how they kind of look, almost, right? Yeah. So the X-Wing is called the X-Wing because the wings form sort of an X. You have the B-Wing, which if you look at it in a certain way, you could say it looks kind of like a B, and the A-Wing is basically a wedge. And you have the Y-Wing, which the back of it is a Y, right? Yeah. So.
And the Y-Wings were like the bomber ones, right? Like they're the bombers, and then they...
Yeah, they have bombers, but they also have ion cannons that you can put on them, which are nasty. So in X-Wing you build a squad. One guy builds a Rebel squad, the other player builds an Imperial squad, and each ship has a pilot. Some of them are generic pilots, some of them are unique pilots that have special abilities, and they all have a different pilot skill rating. So starting with the sort of lowest skill rating, you flip over your maneuver dial, which you set you determine those hidden, sort of. So it's secretly determine what movement your ship is going to do, and then everyone moves their ships, and then after everyone is moved, you start with the highest level pilot, and they can try to shoot at one of the other ships. And so it's kind of neat. So it's sort of a back and forth, and
it's a war game on the cheap too, Shane. Isn't it? It's not as expensive, say, as Warhammer or Warhammer.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not as expensive as Warhammer. So the base game is, again, $30, sort of standard. The base game gives you, I think, one X-Wing and two TIE fighters, and then each ship that you buy is like $12 or so. But they have some bigger ships, so they have like the Millennium Falcon, which I think is 15 or 20. They have Boba Fett's ship, and they have and then they have some really huge ships. So they have a Rebel Transport, and they have the Tantive IV, which is the Corellian ship from the very start of the original Star Wars. And
like the ship that Darth Vader was shooting at?
Yeah, that he was shooting out, that they captured, that Princess Leia was on.
Oh, yeah.
And C-3PO and...
And C-3PO and R2-D2, and they jettison out through the escape pod. Anyways, that ship, I think, is like...
It would be so funny if you just literally just like, and then you just did the whole movie. it's like, Shane, it's 2 a.m.
Very cool.
Anyway, so yeah, so I'm looking forward to trying out the ships, because the TIE Phantom has a cloak, so it can basically almost disappear, and the TIE Defender's neat because it's a TIE fighter that actually has shields. So
I must confess, initially when I saw that game, I was not interested, but as time has gone on, I've kind of took a shining to actually trying it.
Yeah, it's definitely a game where when I watched Will Wheaton's tabletop episode, it didn't intrigue me that much. But then my coworker said that he had it, and he asked me to try it. And it's much more fun to actually play than it is to see someone else play. So,
yeah, I also feel that they dumbed it down for the tabletop episode.
I'm trying to make it mainstream.
Mm-hmm. All right, before we go into Will Wheaton, Tony, what's your pick?
Wait, what?
Oh, gosh. This is going to be kind of embarrassing because I should have played this game like 2 or 3 years ago. Settlers of Catan. Everybody keeps telling me it's a wonderful game to play and it's really fun and I'd really enjoy it, and we never play it.
It's sort of the standard Euro entry game that most people played as sort of their... entry point into the larger
their
world
segue into
new board
games.
It's one of those funny things because I'm half minds of it. Like, yes, you should play Settlers. So you can say, I've played Settlers, like one plays Monopoly or Scrabble, okay. So you know what it is. But, like, Settlers of Catan has inspired so many...
Better games.
Like, and I don't mean a knock against Settlers of Catan, because, like, well, the person who invented the first wheel was probably not very good. But the point is that they came up with the first wheel.
I get it.
Settlers of Catan isn't that bad.
No, it's a fun game. There are games that are more fun that have come after it.
Yeah, I'm just saying the first wheel was probably like really good because there were no wheels before it. But I'm saying if you compare the wheel of then to the wheel of today, the wheel of today is nice. Like it has shocks sometimes, rubber, different ways of doing things. I'm just saying.
I think we should stick to board games.
Yeah. Anyways, it's worth playing, Tony.
Yeah.
Definitely worth playing.
I next time I'm up, I'll bring it. I'll bring the base set. We can play. It's yeah, it's interesting because it sparked the debate in Euro games between randomness and strategy. Because a lot of Euro games believe that the smartest person at the table should always win, so that there shouldn't be any luck. Like, you just need to outsmart your opponent, and if your opponent does something, you have to counter and figure out a way around it. Whereas Settlers, because it has dice, you could have the best strategy on earth, and if your numbers don't come up, then you don't win. So once you accept that, you know, sometimes the numbers aren't going to go your way, then, you know, I enjoy the game. It's a bit long too. It tends to drag a bit, but
The one drawback is that if you get behind at a certain point, you can get to a point where there's very little chance that you could make a comeback and win. Unless the people that you're playing with are completely not paying attention. You can get to a point where there's not a whole lot of ways that the other people can mess you up.
Yeah, there is a solitaire element to it. I would argue, though, that if you do get into that position, I realize now... So for Settlers...
Everyone else will gang up on you if they're smart, and then... But then it goes the opposite. So you could be out ahead, and then if everyone gangs up on you, then you're toast.
Yeah, the other element, just to clarify, for Settlers of Catan, is so you have resources, and every turn the dice rolls decides what resources come up. And so you build little houses and little villages and little cities beside these different tiles. So say sheep or a woods or whatever. And if the number comes up that's on that tile, then you get those resources. And so you're trying to get to 13 points. And you get points for cities. You get points for having the longest road. You get points for various things. I was just going to say to your point, though, Shane, is that if you get into that point where you're behind, you do the development card. Like, that's just the base set before you get all the expansions. You just – development cards is the only way – if you're behind, it's pretty much the only way you can catch up. Like, you just start buying those, like, no tomorrow.
You still have to be able to afford those, though.
That's true. That's the downside. But, yeah, Tony, I think you would like it. There are probably stronger, more tactical games afterwards, but it is definitely a game to try.
Very cool.
My pick is a game, well, it's a tie. Two Euro games, speaking of games inspired by Settlers of Catan, I have Lewis and Clark and Lords of Waterdeep, are two games that I own, which I have not had a chance to set up and play. Lords of Waterdeep is a worker placement game where you place your workers in various points of Waterdeep, which is a Dungeons & Dragons city, and you're trying to get resources together to complete quests, and then whoever has the most points at the end wins. It seems like a very cool intro. It's a very easy Euro. Like, there's not a lot of tactics to it, but still, it's actually pretty neat. I just haven't had a chance to play. And the other one is Lewis and Clark, where you are Lewis and Clark, and you have cards, like a hand of cards, and you play them to get resources together to move your canoe expedition from St. Louis to Washington.
Every time you say Lewis and Clark, I always think Lois and Clark. And I'm like, I always think of, like, you know, the Lois and Clark show. And it's like a board game version of that show. I have no idea how that would even exist, but we should make one.
That would be interesting. I guess it would have to be like a Euro Ameritrash. Like, you'd have each player would have like a superhero, like a Superman, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, doing Ameritrash fighting out there, and then you'd have Alois who's doing journalism. So I guess I don't know how you mesh those together. And then I guess
it'd be like an escort quest or capture the princess or something.
So it'll be like the worst game ever.
Yeah, I hate escort quests. Alois, you're dead. I'll be in my fortress in solitude.
All right. Well, we've talked about board games, card games for an hour. Do we want to wrap up on video games and then call it a night?
Sure.
Sounds good.
On video games, I actually started Bravely Default.
Yeah. Hooray. Oh my god.
Which has the most bizarre opening ever, where don't run down that hill, you'll trip and fall, and then the city falls in, and you watch your brother die. I'm like, that is pretty harsh.
Yeah, lesson learned.
That's where you get from tripping, you little twerp.
Told you this would happen. Yeah, I really like that game. Proceed, enjoy.
Yeah, so how far did you get?
Oh, I'm not
without very far. Spoiling too much, obviously.
I'm in the first village, and I'm wandering around.
Nice. Uh-huh. Actually, with the what I wanted to do about the video game section is if we kind of go around with all of us and kind of we have like two things. We'll go around and say a game that we've actually got a chance to play this week since the last time that we did it. So 2 weeks ago was our last podcast. And then we'll go around again, and we'll obviously talk about that. And then we'll go around again saying that a game that you've kind of discovered since the last one that you haven't got a chance to play. Similar to what we did with the board game one, only video game style. So cool. Scott, you went first. And you've actually played was Bravely Default, and you're starting to like it and stuff like that, which is good. It's very good. It's very like Final Fantasy, but let's kind of mix it up a little bit with like certain classes. Like classes that you wouldn't think that would work, but they actually work.
Merchant class?
I think this is interesting because this is the mere opposite of Tony's problem when he says, well, I don't know if I can invest all this time to understand Netrunner. I find that this is the Bravely Default is Netrunner. But I'm playing it by my Japanese RPGs are netrunners in the sense that they have complexity that I have to work through. And I have the mental trouble of, well, I'm playing this by myself.
Why commit that brain power?
Yeah. I'd rather commit to games that I'm gonna play with other people. So that's
exactly, and to be honest, that's why I don't really enjoy Skyrim. Like, I love the game, I love the environment, but at the end of the day, you know, like after, you know, committing 6 or 7 hours to, you know, a stretch of gameplay, like, well, as even though I feel accomplished, who am I bragging to? Nobody else is playing with me. And even our friend John, he's having that problem too, because he's posting, you know, fantastic pictures of accomplishment of everything he's doing in Skyrim. He's like, I wish you guys were here. So, you know, that's why I like the multiplayers, the co-ops, the MMOs, you know, the stuff that way. But, yeah, I see that argument there. But with the 3DS, I find that I can take it to work with me, or I can, you know, just sit down and play it for 5 or 10 minutes at a time. And, you know, I have that ability to just close my Game Boy and go about my day. Whereas, you know, card games, you've got space and time and setup and whatnot that you've got to pay attention to.
But you do get bragging rights.
Yes, bragging rights are important.
They should really make a Skyrim that is multiplayer, even though they have one, but it's an MMO. They should make something that's a cooperative multiplayer experience, much in the vein of Borderlands.
I was just about to say Borderlands would be a great example, that you can just basically link your friends into your story and away you go.
But not Borderlands. Because like. Like, I like the stylized Borderlands, but it's like, like it's one of those things that I in a fantasy setting, oh my god, that would be so much better.
I tried to play Borderlands because I got it part of Players Plus, which is a very nice Christmas present, Matt, because I actually get games now.
Yeah, buddy. You're welcome.
Yeah, maybe that's
just so you know, that's now your Christmas gift until the end of time.
But the Borderlands, I played it, and I must confess that I found it very dry. Is that the right? Like, I found it difficult because I'm not good at first-person shooters.
See, the charm of Borderlands is playing with friends, and that's the big thing, right?
Exactly. I honestly wouldn't have played through Borderlands if Matt and I weren't playing together.
Oh yeah.
Because to me, if Matt wasn't there, it would have just been another first-person shooter. It was pretty. It was entertaining for a while, but I wouldn't have stuck with it if it wasn't co-op.
And see, the reason why I ever really got into Borderlands is because all the guys that I play games with, they're mm-hmm. into first-person shooters. Yeah. I'm not so much. So I like the RPG elements there. Mm-hmm. All the different weapons you can pick up. You know, it's just it was just a lot of fun. The first one, I haven't played the second one too much, but.
Yeah. I found that all the weapons ended up getting very overwhelming after a while, just to the point where I stopped paying attention. Then every like 10 levels or so, then I'd re-equip my guy with new weapons. But I just found there was so much gear dropping around all the time. I was spending half of my time staring into chests and not nearly enough time running around accomplishing anything.
Exactly.
Yeah, trying to figure out whether the gun that is on the ground is better than the gun you currently equip.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I spend an awful lot of time at those...
At the vending machines, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, that was who was that?
No, we're still we kind of derailed.
Yeah, back to date Bravely Default. All
right, so
Shane's next then.
Yep, Shane.
Oh man, I was hoping someone else would go first.
Okay, Lenny.
So games that I've recently played. Shovel Knight. Shovel Knight. Is a lot of fun. It's like a throwback to the old school 8-bit era. You know, a little bit of Mega Man in there, a little bit of I would also say Castlevania. You name it, it's in there. It's just a lot of fun. What it is, if anybody doesn't know, is it's a knight with a shovel. And your shovel is your weapon, and you'll come across people that will make fun of your weapon. You'll also come across people that will be very excited that they've met the Shovel Knight. And so basically you go through different parts of a map, and you'll... you know, be going to, let me think here. What you'll be doing is, you'll be defeating different knights, and I can't remember exactly the story, but suffice it to say, there's an evil queen that's kind of controlling everything. And your goal is to, if I remember correctly, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, I think you're trying to rescue someone.
That usually is the premise to those kinds of games.
Yeah, but I think...
I don't understand. It's too complicated. What? You're saving who?
Is she in this tower or in the other one?
I can't remember if there's... I'd have to... It's been a little while since I picked it up, but I can't remember if there's...
Are you saving the spade princess?
Oh, God. All right, good show, everyone. See y'all later.
But there are some nice spots there where you can upgrade your weapons, you can upgrade your armor. There was a part that I've just bought the most expensive armor, but the description of the armor is looks fancy, but is absolutely useless.
Nice.
So I bought it anyway.
Is it useless?
Well, I don't know. It's the only difference seems to be when I jump, I kind of do like a spin jump. But I don't think that actually does anything. It just looks flashy. Cool.
Nice.
So.
Nice. All right, Tony, since Shane's probably still thinking.
Oh, what have I been playing lately?
New.
Something new. Well, I've picked up a whole bunch of games during the Steam sale. Oh, I also got a free game on my Wii U last week that I started playing this week that has been driving me bonkers. Super Mario U.
Is that the 2D one or the 3D one?
The 2D one. Because I picked up Mario Kart 8 and just randomly turned on my Nintendo one day and I said, hey, you get a free game because you bought Mario Kart. So after filling out like 100 fields and verifying my existence, they gave me, Nintendo Mario.
How far are you? What world are you at?
I have completed the first world. I have beaten most of the second world, and I'm getting frustrated between the third world and the fourth world. There's a lot of swearing and vulgarity coming out of me.
Sorry, Tony, you have a problem with the third world?
Yes, specifically the third world and the fourth world.
Who's the fourth world?
Whole other plane of existence. Don't let me get me started. I've been playing with that a little bit, but like I say, it's enjoyable but frustrating. So I usually shut that off after a while and go back to Mario Kart.
Which you've also been playing.
Is that the one with the raccoon outfit?
No, that's 3D World.
Yeah.
That's the cat. You're the cat outfit in the 3D World.
What's the one where they give you the outfit if you're not playing well?
Oh. I don't know.
I have no idea what that is.
I think you're just making stuff up now.
No, there's one of the Marios that if you're not playing well, Penny Arcade made a cartoon about it. A comic about it. If you're not playing well, then all of a sudden this thing comes down, and it gives you, because if you're having trouble, and then it gives you this suit, and then you can just go through the level really easily. But it's sort of an insult if it gives it to you. I'm trying to remember what it was.
Yeah, Jake? Well, there's something like that. Like, if you die a certain number of times in a certain dungeon or a world, then this little Luigi tutorial will pop up, and it will basically do the level to... Well, straight to the end. I've actually never gone to the end with it, but once you get past the spot that you were struggling with, you can then take over and proceed as you want, or just let him completely beat the map for you, I would assume. But, there's that option as well.
That's kind of weird. I don't know if I like that.
Well, if you're like,
I guess for
an experienced gamer such as us, that would be an insult. But if you're, you know, a 7 or 8 year old kid who just wants to get to the next world, that's a different story.
I would probably say a 7 or 5 year old maybe.
Maybe. Well, they may as well just watch a movie then if they're just going to let Luigi do all the work. So. but as for something I haven't played yet,
you're jumping the gun.
Sorry. Yeah,
we're doing it.
So now Shane's in the spotlight.
Okay, right. Carry on.
There hasn't really been anything new that I've been playing. I've just been revisiting games that I haven't finished yet and trying to put some progress in on them.
That counts. That would count, right?
Sure.
Because we're talking about it's pretty much like. Like progress, and then the games that we haven't made any progress. That's like the two different categories that we're going for here.
So on the Vita, I reloaded up Final Fantasy X.
Yeah.
Finally got back to it. So I'm just at the point after the quote unquote wedding and the fallout from that, and so we're just running through the. Palace at Bavel right now after bringing the gang all back together.
Oh, so you're actually pretty decently into it.
Yeah, I made good progress before I had put it aside for a little bit, and so, yeah. So now I'm back, and I'm gonna try to spend some more time getting through it before Disgaea 4 comes out. And the other game that I've been playing a bit is, because I've been borrowing an iPad from work, is I've been playing Hearthstone.
Do you have a PS4, Shane?
No, I do not.
Because the one thing that bothers me about Final Fantasy X and X-2 remaster is it's not cross-buy.
No, yeah. It's not. Although it's not on the PS4 either. It's a PS3 that it's on.
Sorry, PS3. Sorry.
Which I also do not have.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, I'm playing on Vita. And it's awesome on Vita.
I ended up getting it both. On Vita and the PS3 because I want to support Square Enix in their decision to remaster old Final Fantasy games. So I'm like, listen, all right, this is my... I'm giving you this money, Square Enix. Please, for the love of God, make Final Fantasy 12 remastered because it's the only...
Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah,
the only
awesome.
One that you can't play in on the modern consoles.
I feel that, Matt, though, your purchases are static because remember you had a boycott of Prince of Persia?
Which lasted for like 30 minutes.
A boycott on the movie and the game.
And I watched both. Well, why was I boycotting it though?
Because they killed the Prince of Persia, the
version I really liked, yeah. Yeah, I really like that, Prince of Persia game, but then they screwed it up by continuing on with the old one, and which obviously didn't work either, because now they have to reboot it again, which they're apparently working on right now.
Apparently they're also going to be doing an update of sort of the original Prince of Persia.
Oh, like the old 2D side-scroller?
Like the old 2D side-scroller one? Yeah, but they're going to redo it with, you know, HD graphics and...
Well, they did that in the last generation, the PS3 and Xbox generation. It was called Prince of Persia Classic.
Maybe they're making a new one in the style, but in, you know, current graphics.
Oh, okay. Like Super HD.
Yeah, super HD, but a slightly different story, slightly different game, but still much like the original.
Oh, okay.
Will it be side-scrolling?
But not an exact remake, sorry. I should say spiritual sequel.
They're going to keep the time reversal thing, though. They can't get rid of that.
Yeah, that's like their whole niche thing.
Because the original one didn't have that. It had, like, you had so much time, or you lost the game, and you would get sands that would extend the timer, so you had more time to finish the game and save the princess from the evil vizier, because that's how Arabian Nights go.
Yeah.
Do they go much like Arabian Days?
No, Arabian Days are hotter. There's more intrigue at night.
Are you going to sing the rest of the song there, Lenny?
Well, I said hot, and I said hotter than hot. In a lot of good ways.
And that survivor's database has been updated.
Okay, so who's... So now
I'm the only one that's left.
Yeah.
And I have... I guess Final Fantasy 14 doesn't count, right?
No.
All right, so I have two games that I was playing since the last podcast. The first one is I restarted on the Vita Final Fantasy 1, the original. And I used the PS1 classic one, because now the Vita has become my Final Fantasy machine. That's awesome. And I'm just at the elf town, and I have to grind so much because the party choice that I chose. So I'm like Final Fantasy
4 red mages.
No, I wish I probably deal with them better. So I
four,
have
four white mages.
That'll be the slowest game ever.
But you would never die.
That is worth a trophy right there.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But I picked a warrior, a thief, a black mage, and white mage. So that's like your standard, typical, very traditional style party. But I'm having a heck of a time with it, because the warrior is the only one that seems to be doing anything good. Or the black mage when I can... Like, when he needs to be. But the problem with the Black Mage is that it's not the newer versions of Final Fantasy 1 have MP that they use for their spells. But yes. The older version, which is, like, the version I'm playing, it's just done by charges, depending on your level. So, right now, I think my guys are at level 9, so I get 5 charges for level 1 spells. So I can use the 3 level 1 spells that I have 5 times. Yeah. And then it's like goes 5, 4, 3, 2, and then 1 for like as the levels go up. So I like
that's weird. Where's that from? Because that's not from the original.
Yeah, it is from the original. The original was charges. It wasn't.
Yeah, I agree.
Wasn't MP. MP wasn't introduced until Final Fantasy 2, the Japanese version of Final Fantasy 2. So, but then in later versions of the game, if you got like the iPad version or.
The PSP version?
Yeah, the PSP version. Those have MP. They changed it, so it was more...
I'm trying to remember when I played it. If I could have swore there was MP.
Well, you might have played it on the PSP then.
No, Super Nintendo, the original.
The original Nintendo? Well, the original one was charges as well.
Huh. I had a horrible party. We had a fighter, a black belt, a red mage, and a black mage.
Oh, yeah, that'd be rough.
We used a lot of potions.
Yeah.
And we fought the end boss, and the end boss, our black mage, died before we even got in there. And they were like, all right, well, let's just try and see what happens. So we go in, and the red mage spent all this time just doing potions because we tried to use any of his spells and it didn't do any damage. And then he died fairly quickly. And so it was the fighter and the black belt. Basically, one would hit, one would heal, one would hit, one would heal, and we went back and forth, back and forth, and it must have taken like an hour just to whittle him down, because he healed himself a couple times too, and we're like, ugh. And it was just, eventually we ran out of potion, but we won. It was probably the most epic fight I've ever done in a video game.
Jeez. Cool. I think I would want to do 3 fighters and a white mage.
I wouldn't even go white with 3 warriors and a red.
Yeah, because the warriors, like, that's the thing. Like, so right now when I'm fighting the mob, the monsters right now, is that the fighter does about 110 damage. And then the thief does 12 damage. And then the fighter, when he gets hit, it only does 1, maybe 5 damage tops. And then when the thief gets hit, he does a lot more because he can't wear the nicer armor and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I know, like, playing this game, that down the road, like, when thief becomes ninja, it's, like, you know, really awesome, right? They're, like, they do tons of damage, but it's just brutal trying to get them.
Getting there, yeah.
All right.
I'm gonna, yeah, because we've gone on for a long time, so I'm going to quickly go. So I did Final Fantasy, and then last night, I played The Wolf Among Us from beginning to end, because the season's all done now, so... And that's why I'm slightly tired right now, because I stayed up until 2 in the morning yesterday playing it. But that game was amazing. That season, the way that story, like, unfolds, especially in episode 5, man, that is, like, some of the best storytelling in games that I've ever...
Now, would you say it's better than Walking Dead?
I'm going to say, personally, I think yes, but that's... I always thought that like, the Fable Town, like, that whole, like, that story premise is much more interesting than The Walking Dead. Because Walking Dead, it's kind of your standard zombie story and stuff like that. Not a knock against how good Walking Dead is, because that game's amazing as well. And that game was a lot more sadder and depressing. But with Wolf Among Us, it was a lot more tense. Like, I was tense through it, going, like, not just with the fight, although... mild spoilers is that Bloody Mary is one of the main villains in the game, and like, your confrontation with her in episode 5 is like some of the most tense, scary, creepy, like, fight ever that I've played. Like,
so is it
borderline horror? Like,
is it a timed fight? Is that what it is?
No, it's like it's an interesting style of how they do it. It's like, it's quasi quick time eventy, but it's like you have to do like certain keystrokes and stuff like that. But it's not just like, you know, press Q or press E or whatever. I play it on the PC. It's like, you know, you have to move your mouse in certain areas, and it's like timed and all of that. So it's like an evolution of a quick time event.
Oh, okay.
Which some people wouldn't like, but like. The way that the story is, and like the way that it's so tense, like the atmosphere and the storytelling that they've done, it really gets you into it, and so you're like, oh crap, like sometimes you forget that you have to do stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're so enthralled in what's going on. But yeah, I would recommend that game, like, just to play through it. It's shorter than Walking Dead. Like, it's like each episode only takes about an hour and a half to get through, as opposed to Walking Dead takes about 2.5 hours, except for the last episode, which takes a little less time. But, like, yeah, Walking Dead, awesome game. It was a lot of fun.
Now, Matt, had you ever read the Fables before playing Wolf Among Us?
I've read the first 2 issues. I have them on my iPad. I just haven't got a chance to, like, continue going. But it's different. Like, it's definitely...
It's a prequel. The Wolf Among Us happens before Fables even starts.
Yeah, it's because doesn't Bigby, he becomes not mayor.
Is he sheriff? He's still the sheriff.
Oh, he's still the sheriff? Okay, because he's sheriff in this one too, so.
Yeah, but he's just become sheriff. In my understanding of Wolf Among Us, he's just become sheriff.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
He's a standing sheriff. Like, he's been the sheriff a while, and when the comic starts.
Yeah. And he definitely looks older in the comic books. Like, he looks like in the game, he looks like he's in his 30s, mid 30s, but in the in the comic, he looks older. He looks like he's in his 40s, almost late 40s even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
I just wondered if you, how much you had read and what you thought of the style of the game storytelling versus the graphic novel storytelling.
Now, I would say, well, like, that being said, I haven't watched, like read too much of the graphic novel.
Yeah,
but
so.
I can't make a full judgment, but I believe just the way that I like to consume media, I enjoy the video game a lot more just because, you know, it's like the writing is so good in the game, and the way, and the presentation of like the all the voice acting and even the animations. Like, obviously it's like a smaller team that does it, so that it's a little janky, but the facial expressions is what they've mastered, and you can tell that they focused on the facial expressions over anything else. Because like you look and like you're talking to like Snow White or something like that, and you can see like she's like her emotion is like written right all over her face. Like she doesn't have to say anything. Like you're just like, oh man, she's like really scared right now, or oh my god, she's like really sad or upset about something, right?
Nice.
And it's like, yeah, it's very, very good.
I don't know if it's a fair comparison because the comic is built up like a Game of Thrones. Like if you read the first couple, like Fables builds up steam much later. Like I probably read a third of the series and it started getting going and I just got busy. And so I didn't finish it, but it was a slow build because it's like any science fiction-y fantasy thing. Like there's a monster weak element at the start, and then slowly but surely they build an actual story around it. And whereas it seems to me, I haven't played the Wolf Among Us game, is it just went right into the story. Like it started in where it's a smaller story.
Yeah, it's definitely like you get aspects of the bigger things that are happening, but it's definitely been catered down to a smaller bite size. And that's just because until recently, Telltale, the people that made the game, they weren't a big company. But now, ever since like The Walking Dead was like did amazing, so then their company essentially doubled in size. So Wolf Among Us is like the last game of the old Telltale.
Right.
So now with Tales from the Borderlands and Game of Thrones, like the Telltale games that are coming out later, though, that's going to be like the new Telltale. So those games will probably be the same style of game, but the production value is probably going to be even higher. And you can tell, like, even as you're playing Wolf Among Us, from episode one to the final episode, you can see that it's like, oh, things are running better, it's smoother, it's like, it's getting better as the game's progressing as well. So you can tell that I'm really excited of their next two series, because it's gonna, like, they're gonna be like top notch.
Yeah, I just need them to bring Wolf Among Us out on the Vita like they said they were going to last fall.
I don't know now. There's a lot of people are jumping ship on the Vita. It's a sad story, but
extra credit summed that up.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so really quickly we'll go through of games that we've discovered this week. And then we'll wrap it up because we're running at 2.5 hours now. So.
Oh my god! Okay.
Yes. One and a half.
What? Oh, 1.5 hours. Sorry. Two and a half since I started talking to you, Tony.
All right. Until I put you on hold for an hour.
Yeah.
which is roughly how long it would have taken you to learn Netrunner.
Possibly. All right, Scott. So let's start with you. What games have you discovered? Video game that you discovered that you really want to play but haven't yet?
This week?
No, the past 2 weeks, since the last podcast.
Probably for the 3DS. I did some research for the 3DS. I would like to try the Fire Emblem series. For the 3DS, because I have a 3DS now, so I was just looking at games on it, so that was one.
It's supposed to be really good.
Yeah, I have it, but I haven't got a chance to play it yet.
So, that's my pick.
All right, Lenny, are you still there?
I am.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
All right. Because my headset died, and I had to go find a charge cable.
Okay, so I don't know. Do you know that we're going through games that we discovered, but we haven't got a chance to play yet?
Okay, so can this be something I played for a very little bit?
Yeah, sure.
Sure.
I'm going to say 1001 Spikes.
Oh, my God.
That was excellent. I actually quite enjoyed that game, even though I was terrible at it.
The game is so hard, but it's so funny because, like, it's just like it's very cheap. It's like when you make it across something that was very hard, it will kill you with some spikes that just pop out of blocks randomly.
I would say it's a lot like Pitfall or Montezuma's Revenge. Like, you kind of, like, you're just jumping through a level. And there's spikes everywhere. It just spikes. Like, everything you do, there's a spike. And you're like, really?
And if there's not a spike, if you're jumping over a spike to get across something, there'll be like a cheap like a block fall on your head, or a block falls away and then you fall onto some more spikes. And I had a lot of fun, and again, I just played it for a little bit, but I had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed the multiplayer we did. It was quite good.
Yeah, with the multiplayer that we did too.
It's 11, we're running out of time!
A game that's purposely cheap is much more accepting than a game that isn't supposed to be cheap, but is.
Yeah.
So, like playing it, you're just like, oh, jeez, this is, like, the worst. But then, like, when you're playing, like, and, like, and you know going in, it's like, yeah, this game is cheap and it'll mess you up.
Yeah, like, I ended up getting, like, Super Meat Boy in, like, a $7 indie pack. And even though it was a stupid, cheap, ridiculous game, I giggled at it for half an hour. It was definitely worth the $7 I paid for it. And then I get the Bureau out of, you know, like the $10 bin, and I was expecting it to be, you know, a fantastic game, and I was sick of it after like 3 hours. It was such a sad game, but it had such a great production value, or you would expect it to, if the company that was making it, and it
you
was
said
just
the Bureau, is that XCOM?
Yeah, XCOM, okay. Declassified.
Yeah.
It was set back in like the 1950s and whatnot. Interesting premise set in the XCOM universe, but it just did not stand up to my expectations. I was really disappointed in it. But having said that, you know, you can pay pocket change for Super Meat Boy and think it's hilarious. So I guess it's really just a matter of perspective.
Have you guys seen Indie Game, the movie?
Actually, it just popped up on my Steam here.
Yeah, I want to see it. I never got a chance to yet.
I watched it on a plane. It is excellent.
Oh, yeah?
It follows
Phil Fish, right?
Phil Fish.
Meat Boy developers, and they follows Fez, the guy who makes Fez.
Phil Fish is the Fez.
And then there's a brief discussion with the guy who made Braid.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I should watch that. But the thing about, hold on, Tony, what was the game that you said that, like, you, Super Meat Boy, but what was the other one?
The Bureau.
Oh, the Bureau. Yeah, the problem with the Bureau is that it went through development hell, like, super crazy. Like, that game was a lot different than what it ended up being.
Yeah.
Like, it was originally going to be, like, a Bioshock-style game, and then it turned into what it turned into over the years, but it's kind of sad because I think that studio is now closed, which is always sad to hear. But
yeah, like I loved XCOM, so as soon as I saw that there was this other game coming out that was, you know, under the XCOM banner, I thought it was going to be, you know, at least as good as XCOM, and this just did not stack up. So, you know, I hate to see people losing their jobs over it, but, you know, maybe if that's the kind
of... They deserved it.
Yeah, maybe somebody deserved it.
Yeah. It's more of the higher up people that deserve that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's unfortunate to hear, like, you know, because there's a lot of hardworking developers, and it's not their fault, right? Like, you know, it's like, because, you know, it's like there'd be a guy that just made like The Sky, and you're just like to put it in something you would understand, Tony. Because the little thing about Tony is that every game that we play, he always has a comment about the sky. Like, if we stop at all, he'll look up and be like, man, that sky is just
so beautiful. So when he plays board games with us, he's going to comment on the ocean or the rolling hills in Settlers of Catan?
Yeah. Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, he is. He's like, look at this ocean.
Like, hey, is that a serpent in the ocean here? Like, what is that? Is it fighting a caravel? That's pretty cool. But,
Okay, so how many games have we have left? So who's left?
So Scott, you said Lenny, Scott, Lenny, and Tony went, right?
Oh, I have a quick three.
That
I picked up that I haven't. They're in my list here. I haven't played them yet. Brothers.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah, Contrast.
Wait, which Brothers?
I don't know, just the game
one
Brothers.
The one that you played, Scott.
The other one you're thinking of, I think, is called Two Brothers.
Hold on. I think I'm looking at the one Matt's thinking of.
The Two Brothers one, I think, is a black and white.
Yeah, no, this one's not black and white.
No.
Okay. So it's the one I played.
Yeah. The one where it's, like, super sad.
Yeah. Well, something to look forward to then, I guess. So yeah, I got Brothers, Contrast, and another Banished. Banished, it's kind of interesting that kind of like a Civilization real-time strategy, Age of Empires. I really don't know what to expect because I've installed it but I haven't played it yet. So
yeah, apparently,
I'll let you know in a couple weeks.
It's like Age of Empires / Sim City because there's no combat in it. It's literally just city.
Sim City or Sim City?
Simulation City.
All right, yeah,
Simulation City.
All right, so there's that. And then Lenny, you said 1001 Spikes, and what did you say, Scott?
Fire Emblem.
Fire Emblem.
So Shane's the last one.
And then
so I had heard about it, but I just read a review that kind of makes me want to play, even though I kind of have some trepidation about it, but it's a game for the Vita called Monster Mon Piece. It's a card playing game, but it's got some elements that are very Japanese, more so than regular. So apparently there are some scenes that are slightly uncomfortable to play.
Wait a minute. What was the name of it again?
It's called Monster Mon Piece.
Oh, because there's a physical one called Tantokuro, which is like Dominion with maids, where you're getting maids and you have to put them in the chamber and do rather inappropriate things.
This one, it's a card game, so you go around and gather cards, but there's a very unfortunate way that you can power up some of the cards.
Like Sailor Moon style?
Similar.
Sort of, yeah. But anyways, apparently the card game aspect of it is really good, so I want to play it because I like card games.
That's the joke about the Tantokuro game, is that it's apparently a well-designed game because it has to be because it has pictures of naughty maids, and you're like, oh, I play it for the mechanics.
Yeah. So that's why I want to play it, but I don't want to play it.
You're not going to explain how you how you level up their cards?
No.
You know what we should?
Lin is sitting right beside me. So.
You know the Japanese game we should play. I'm gonna bring this back to PG. The game that you should all check
but
a video.
But it uses the full function of the Vita.
Yeah. So you have to.
Oh, I've heard of this game.
Yeah, you have to turn the Vita sideways and rub the cards strategically to power them up to increase their. Affection towards you, it's very, very wrong.
It's very Japanese. Japanese.
We've learned a lot about Shane today.
That he can accurately say trepidation at 11 o'clock at night.
Yes.
Okay, Shane, you tell Lynn that I am disappointed in you.
Hey, I said that's why. I want to see the card game part of it. I don't need all the other stuff that goes along with it. So.
I'm just going to use a board game. Tantokuro, despite the mechanics, I'm not going to play it. I'm going to play Trains instead, where you are a Japanese train company. No nudies in that one, because trains don't run on nudity.
Well, so the thing is, the other thing about Monster Mon Piece is, it's funny because even
I'm
though
writing
it's got
that down, Scott. Hold on.
Some weird aspects, they actually censored some of the cards. So then you have people that are upset that they brought the censored version over, even though it's still pretty skeevy in parts. So,
are you putting that on a T-shirt, Matt?
I'm writing quotes that I need to write a quote like all the quotes that we do in this
Don't
podcast.
Put that game in bed.
The thing is, though, Shane, apparently that company that makes a lot of card games that are like risque in that way, But they have this huge, like, super cult following over here in North America. And those are the guys that are really upset the fact that they're, like, censoring it. Because they're, like, hardcore dedicated fans to, like, that development company that makes them. So they want the, like, the whole pure experience. They don't the purely innocent experience of that game. They don't want the censored version. Man, I think you should pick it up though, Shane, and tell us what. I think that for our next
episode, talk with, hey guys, I'm doing the podcast from the car because I'm not allowed to use the game in the house, and I'm in trouble.
The windows are.
I should have listened to Scott, and I should have got the trains game.
Okay, so that's Shane's. So there's.
I think this... we're wrapping up.
Yeah, there's.
Well, it's Matt's turn.
Are you telling me or?
Oh no, sorry. You do yours, Matt, and then we'll conclude with what lessons were learned and then call it a night.
So mine is something that I literally just bought just as we were starting to record this. Because that's what I do. And it's called Divinity Original Sin.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. I want to see that.
And the cool thing about this is they're pretty much advertising it as, like, kind of the back-to-the-roots RPG adventure games. That it's like a pen-and-paper RPG, like, the closest that you'll get in video game form. So it's like a top-down, it kind of looks like Diablo, only the difference about it is Diablo is all done in real time, but this is actually a turn-based combat game. And like it's completely open world. Everything's reactive to what you do to it. It's like you could do, it's kind of like mixing like Baldur's Gate with like Diablo with Grand Theft Auto. Is pretty much like what I can think of, what I've seen of it. I haven't, like, I've only seen the trailer of it and stuff.
Grand Theft Auto is in you steal people's horses?
Like Grand Theft Auto, it has that open element that I could do whatever I want feeling in this fantasy world, right? I guess Skyrim would be a better example, only you can, it has single player, multiplayer, cross platform multiplayer.
Can you steal a horse in Skyrim?
Yeah, big time.
Alright.
Do it all.
So that game, is it a sequel to Divine Divinity?
No, I think this is like a separate. I think it was a.
Divine Divinity is the name of the.
That's like there's a game called Divine Divinity.
Double Divine Divinity.
I think it. Kickstarter game. This one.
Shane, I don't know.
Yes, it was.
I have two friends that want that game. This game.
I don't think you could load Divine Divinity on your Vita if you had that. Dirty games as well. It would probably delete the other game and give you a stern talking to.
I'm kind of interested though. It says that it's like a cross-platform multiplayer, but do you guys know if it's out for any other system other than the PC?
I'm thinking it's PC, Mac, is it not?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
Oh, okay, I get you. But yeah, it looks like super fun. I just installed it. It's a little late for me to start now, considering I was up until 2 in the morning last night, so I don't really want to have a 2-1 in a row for that, so I'll probably try it later on this week, but it looks like it's going to be super fun. I'll do some recon on it, and then and maybe we can maybe even play it together, guys, because I think it's 4 players. So one of you won't be able to play it. I'm assuming Scott, because he only has a crappy laptop. So
Shane keeps telling me my laptop's good, but I do not feel it is. All right, well let's wrap up this. What, sorry, Shane?
I didn't say anything.
It's probably good for doing Excel spreadsheets.
Yeah, being productive. All right, so lessons learned. We learned that Shane is a dirty, dirty old man.
No, he's not old. Come on. Let's...
That Tony needs more friends to play board games with.
Or card games.
That's like pretty much for all of us, really.
Yeah. I'm doing okay. I'm getting there.
I'm doing okay.
I need
Don't
a better
feel bad for me. I'm doing just fine.
Lenny needs to talk more. I don't know what mine is. Either I need a new computer or I need to not get angry at my computer as much. And I don't know what Matt's. Oh, Matt just needs to learn to love losing boss monster.
What? Oh, right, yeah. Oh, God.
Oh, God, I remember.
Oh, God,
I lost.
Oh, no.
All right, so are we wrapping up or do we have, like, homework for people?
I got one more thing to say, just kind of, like, housekeeping stuff. So this is, like, to when people actually will listen to this maybe at some point in time. So our email address for anyone that wants to write in a question or anything for us is...
Or Skull Chain
or any of us. Positive or negative comment. You can email us at notimetoplaytoday@gmail.com. Also, as of today, I actually made a Twitter account for us, so you can tweet us at notimetoplaytoday, but it's really weird, and there's no time to, as in the number two, and then play, and then two, the number two, and then day. So everyone got that?
All right, I'm going to remind us in a Facebook message, Matt, so we can all follow it. So at least this guy will have four followers.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, you can follow us on Twitter with that, and you can email us at the email that we said before, and I think that's all the housekeeping stuff that I got going. All
right.
What's a Twitter?
We have a monk?
Tony, you use it in Netrunner.
Okay, all right, yeah. All right, gentlemen, this has been fun.
All right.
All right.
Keep me posted until next time.
All right. Play more games.
I will.
Good night, everyone.
All right, see ya.
Bye.